Welcome to the CEN Show, the voice of the world community. The Community Education Network is a community of educators from a variety of backgrounds. We gather weekly to share our expertise and experiences. Our continuous goal is to self and collectively improve to contribute to a constructive world society. On Monday, we had an excellent show on the podcast Conscious Corner. Historian Joe Hembrick, Professor Amin Ra, Brother Mashinda, and Brother Doctor, and myself, Rasaki Maskani, contributed to a constructive topic, Black health and wellness. This is how listeners can access the show. So I'm about to show everybody how they can access it. If they're interested, I recommend it. Right. So this is YouTube, and you can go to Community Education Network channel, or you can put in Conscious Corner, Black Health and Wellness Historian Joe Hembrick and Professor Amin Ra. That's one way you can access it. Another way is through our podcast.
Yeah.
Here's the whole page. You can go to podcast and just scroll down some. And there you go, Conscious Corner, Black and Health and Wellness. This is an audio. All right, that's two ways you can access that show. I recommend it highly. All right. Tonight's guest is Brother Thomas. This will be his sixth show. Brother Thomas always have intriguing shows, in my opinion, and tonight's topic is the curse of desegregation. Good evening, Brother Thomas. How are you? And please begin your presentation, sir.
All right. First, I'd like to do a little bit of preface or whatnot. I am an educator, Compton Unified School District. I spend a lot of time studying about different issues. I'm a member of the Nation of Islam. I've been a member of the Nation of Islam for over 30 years. And that has also enabled me to filter some of the things out society that I feel we as Black people needed to take advantage of, haven't taken advantage of, and upon this age of enlightenment will eventually take advantage of. And one of those things is the fact that when we were segregated, segregation, went through a lot of atrocities in America, but it set the environment for us to begin to build and do for self. And regardless of all the efforts that the government made to disenfranchise, dislocate, gerrymander, or eminent domain us out of our communities, if we would have just acted like ants and rebuilt, acted like ants, like after a storm that destroyed their whole anthill from inside and out, the survivors rebuilt. They just moved to another location and rebuilt. If we would have just submitted to the laws of nature that was embedded in us as the original people, we would eventually evolve out of segregation into a true aggregation or economically equal society or contributor to American society. Caucasian people were already sneaking across into Black towns to enjoy our food, our music. They were already sneaking into our arenas, enjoying our athletics, from baseball to football to basketball. They were already doing that and saw the phenomenal skills and gifts that we expressed. And then they realized that they, lacking in those gifts and skills by recruiting Black players out of the HBCUs or from the Negro leagues or the basketball leagues or whatnot, that they're that their attendance in their arenas increased and the abilities and the prowess athletically within those respective sports had reached a new high in standard. Eventually, segregation would not have existed, but it would not have existed on our terms because we would have had an economic foundation to barter with America and let them know that these are the standards and the criteria of us opening ourselves up to American society on our terms. But Integration stripped us of all that power. And that's what this presentation is about. So, the curse of desegregation. I like this quote that I heard for the first time when the Honorable Louis Farrakhan was doing some of the Tavis Smiley. Tavis Smiley would throw. I think, Brother Rye, you remember
town hall meetings.
Though the town hall meetings, and I heard, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan had Harry Belafonte on the podium. Tavis Smiley was mediating, and he quoted Martin Luther King saying that he feared that he may have integrated his people into a burning house. And he said that while Harry Belafonte was on the podium, because Harry Belafonte, Harry Belafonte told him that, told him what Martin Luther King said. And he was just quoting Harry Belafonte at the time on what he had said, he had said in behalf of what Martin Luther King had said as it pertains to integration. And as I look at Black people in our condition in America, on every area of activity, we have lost power. We have totally usurped our control, totally usurped our independence, totally usurped our ability to compete on a level playing field as it pertains in relations to our Caucasian counterpart and even other cultures. So desegregation has cursed Black people in all nine areas of activity, from economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. And I got that from Neely Fuller's book, United Independence Compensatory Code System Concept, textbook workbooks for victims of racism, white supremacy. He has these nine areas of activity that we totally have no control over, and that integration has further stripped us of control and put it all in the hands of our mortal enemy and age-old slave, former slave owner. So the first thing I'd like to highlight is what happened. According to Plessy versus Ferguson, we initially went to the courts, and I believe it was 1954, but it was based on a 1953 court hearing in South Carolina that was demanding equal funding for schools. That was our whole thing, was we wanted, according to Plessy versus Ferguson, it happened way before that. Plessy versus Ferguson happened before Briggs versus Elliott. And according to Plessy versus Ferguson, separate but equal facilities and separate but equal facilities were legal in America. It was a system of legality that made sure that Blacks and Caucasians never mixed publicly or privately, and that separate but equal facilities were mandated to ensure that that separation of the two groups was maintained. So in South Carolina, the schools were so badly funded. In the cases of Briggs versus Elliott, they brought it up to the courts and said, yo, look, according to Plessy versus Ferguson, we're supposed to have separate but equal facilities. The funds are supposed to be equally dispersed as it relates to education. They are disproportionately disproportionately favoring Caucasian schools. And we took them to court. And South Carolina laid a precedent at that moment and said, okay, we're going to keep these separate but equal. And we were willing to invest money to ensure that the school facility and resources and teachers' pay was equitable to that of the Caucasian schools. Well, I found out that the NAACP, after the ruling, the NAACP, which was founded by 7 Caucasians and 4 Blacks, funded by Caucasian philanthropists or, you know, who have a history of abolitionism in their family or so-called liberals, they protested. They were astounded, of course. They were astonished that the state was willing to commit such an enormous amount of money to Black schools. And the NAACP ended up rejecting the state's offer and the initial intent of the Black parents to get that money. That would have laid the foundation for separate but equal facilities to be upgraded all throughout America. That would have set that tone. And by that being set, we already had segregated communities that had substandard facilities. But that hearing, that court proceeding would have set the precedent for the government to be willing to fund and finance separate but equal facilities all across the board, from schools to restaurants to infrastructure to anything, theaters, businesses, any state facilities. I mean, it would have went across the board. It would have enabled our communities to reach another level of independence and prowess that segregation had started to do. As you notice, we had hundreds of Black towns that have sprouted up throughout the United States, and they have become independently owned, ran, and operated Black towns. They were substandard due to the lack of resources that Black people had back then, but they were self-sufficient, and many of them were immune to some of the recessions and the depressions that happened back then. We were affected by it, but we had a system, an environment, and a town and a community that would feed and help and unite to make sure that we addressed how greatly we were affected by whether it was a Great Recession or unemployment or whatever was going on in the United States. And other Caucasian communities became jealous of the fact that we were thriving in that regard. You know, so segregation had started this turn. And I like to focus on that, focus on the fact that a lot of us feel like, wow, you know, segregation was a tumultuous time in American history where we were being lynched, we're getting brutalized. But we did have safe havens. And I believe over time, we would have been able to create even a stronger community that could fend off some of those attacks, some of those terrorist assaults that we had to endure. So I want to bring this up. I want to talk about, sidetrack a little bit, and talk about some other segregated groups that thrived because they practiced cooperative economics. They practiced some of the things that we were forced to practice during Jim Crow segregation. There were three main groups that were institutionally discriminated against and practiced group economics till the government granted them stimulus packages that gave them equal footing in America. So there were groups all throughout American history, along with Black people, that were institutionally discriminated against, institutionally ostracized, institutionally brutalized and terrorized, just like us. But they realized that they had to create a hub, a circle of protection around them. They were forced to segregate themselves in their own community, where they took care of each other, uplifted each other. They definitely participated in the political structure within that community. They made themselves over time a credible community for the government to recognize, a credible resource for America to recognize. Now, they were, you know, we have the three groups were the Irish, the Italian, and the so-called Jew. But they were, you know, there was a history about the Irish. The Irish were enslaved alongside of us. The British treated them no different than they treated the Africans in bondage. They were enslaved side by side with us. They had a similar legacy outside of the fact that they were descendants of Europeans. So the Irish were treated just as bad as Black people until their stimulus package gave them control over the police departments. They were able to use that sector of law enforcement, and they were able to build themselves up even stronger into a credible force, to where they were then able to integrate themselves into American society. And now, just like any other European, when they check off their group, their nationality, they check off white American, and they get the benefits of any white American They get the benefits of ill-gotten gains as a result of racism, institutional racism. The Italians, when they came here, and they mass migrated looking for labor, work, and opportunity. They were labeled as thieves and crooks until their stimulus package gave them control over the fire departments and civil service sector. That's, and to this day, even the Irish in like New York and in the East Coast, they're saturated. They run the police department. And just like in the East Coast as well, and all throughout America, the Italians have a strong hold in the fire departments and civil service sectors. Well, after World War II, the so-called Jews, they migrated here. And when they were demonized for their religious and cultural practices until they were given a stimulus package that gave them control over banking and business sectors, to where right now they've saturated themselves in every business, major business sector in the United States, from banking to entertainment to athletics and everything in between, to any form of any entertainment. And all these cultures practice segregation. They practice creating a safety hub around themselves that became economically viable, that became politically powerful, and that became, you know, an asset to America, to where America was willing to invest in and giving them a stimulus package. Just like we had the opportunity to get a stimulus package as well after we got that, after we won that case, the Briggs versus Elliott case, and that the NAACP later fought and changed. I've done some research on NAACP, and I just really am not comfortable with that organization. I wasn't even comfortable with it before I got conscious. I didn't like the fact that after all these years, they still call themselves the National Association of Colored People. I didn't really like that. I did research on the term colored and found out in South Africa, they use the term colored to distinguish the Black people that were mixed with the Caucasian blood. Who were they? The Caucasians in South Africa. They are the, aren't they from the Netherlands or something like that? I forgot the nationality they are. But the colored are distinguished from Blacks. Blacks are the full-blooded Black people in South Africa. And coloreds are those who are mixed with white blood. So I thought about it and I was thinking like National Association of the Advancement of Colored People. Then I thought about Howard University, how that was a university that was founded by Caucasian people to educate the mixed Blacks in America, the colored people. That was not a blue-black, you know, a blue-black university. That was a passing the paper bag test Black people university, if I'm not mistaken. So that's just something to kind of think about. NAACP, I've always questioned them in their resolve. So if Black people decided to practice group economics instead of integrating with their former slave owner, we would have either been allotted a stimulus package similar to what was going to be given to us to make our educational institutions equal to that of Caucasians. Or we would have been able to have separate but equal territories to own, control, and operate, and would have not needed any form of assistance or stimulus package from Caucasian America. See, it's all about waiting. It's all about thriving. It's all about creating a safety hub around ourselves. It's all about us rebuilding whenever Caucasians attacked us. And I understand our mindset back then. I understand a lot of us were uneducated. A lot of us were still reliant and still afraid and obedient to our former slave owners being so close to the Emancipation Proclamation. But we had signs. We had enough towns that showed our ability to self-sustain and to protect ourselves. If we just would have showed a little bit more resolve to rebuild, to stay unified, and maybe even to create some type of a media highway so that each of these towns could have been connected in some way. So that if one was assaulted, we can galvanize somehow, either open up another town to receive those that were separated or that were chased or terrorized out of that town. Some type of a communication highway, like Caucasians had whenever there was a lynching. They had such an awesome communication highway that they were able to send out messages to nearby towns and send 5,000 to 10,000 people to one specific area just to watch a lynching. So they had a way to disseminate information. I'm just thinking maybe that was one of those components that we lacked that caused us to, our communities to fall independently without any assistance from other communities. So NAACP changed the 1954 school segregation in a lawsuit from unequal funding to social integration. The decision resulted in devastating effects. Black schools shut down, Black students bused to Caucasian schools, Black teachers were fired, Black staff was fired. Caucasians deserted integrated schools once again, resulting in substandard inner city segregated schools like Compton Unified School District. My high school, Dominguez High School, is a segregated school in 2022. We have zero Caucasian students. The only Caucasian people on that campus are staff. And when I look at my Caucasian peers, they're a part of the problem. They're teaching the same thing that we've been teaching. Go to college to get a job to work for your old slave master. That's bogus. Jobs are not inheritable. And they're not teaching us the science of how to utilize our money to work for ourselves, to create assets for our children. So we're just taught to work for our slave owner until we retire on a cheap pension that forces us to go back to work in our 60s because our pension ran out. Now we're like greeting people at Walmart. So I'm like, I mean, we could go on and on. Brown versus Board of Education reduced students to being guests in schools, businesses, and communities. They were just like us now. The Browns versus Board of Education obliterated segregation, and now we're guests in stores, restaurants, hotels. We're guests. But then Caucasians, just to make sure that we're not totally open to integrating with them, so-called, in certain places, they have a new form of racism now called pricism. The average Black man and woman have a socioeconomic gap that is so wide that we can't even afford to stay and to reap the benefits of some of the restaurants and societal amenities that integration says that we have the right to attend now. Restaurants are too expensive for us to frequent. Some five-star hotels are impossible for us to frequent. We don't travel. I was looking at the Super Bowl, and I looked at the audience, and I saw a 90%+ Caucasian audience, just like a lynching. It was like, Black people do not go to the Super Bowl because, number one, we can't afford it. So where do Black and Mexicans go? We go at home and have, what, a Super Bowl party. We don't go. And it reminds me of the Jim Crow lynchings, because we don't go to the lynchings, but we do hear about them. We do know the results of the lynching contest and whatnot. So that's just an observation. Oh, by the way, before I go, does anybody have any comments about my perspective as it relates to integration and NAACP and you know, what caused us to choose an overall, you know, economically life-threatening system where Black people are no longer united, where we're now scattered, where we're integrated, where we're guests, spending our money and resources in places that don't have our best interest at heart whatsoever. Anybody have any comments or questions as it relates to the information before I go on?
You could call one person at a time and see if they have any comments.
All right, Baba Ra. Oh, you're on mute.
Appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. First of all, I want to say, it's good to have the good doctor on and Senator and Brother Joe. There's a lot when it comes down to segregation, as if it was Black people's choice to be segregated. It wasn't even their choice to be integrated into America at the beginning. There were two major destructions of humanism in this society, and that was the first one, the Native American, and the second was the African Holocaust of enslavement and the genocide of the Native American are the two biggest sins and all propagated by white supremacy and viciousness and inhumaneness. When it comes down to desegregation being a problem, it may have been a problem in some areas, but in some areas, people flourish. It's not where it should be, but we were able to. What do you do if Europeans have all the companies, and in the 40s and the 50s, and they're gonna hire you because they're in a war, and the white men with the army was segregated, so they hired a lot of Black people. Where you gonna come? You shouldn't work. I don't think Black people work for their slave master or worked for their companies. I think they work to help their families and to struggle for a better day. To get to the point where we self-sufficient is presumed that we all think alike and all want to be a part of a self-sufficient group. Some African-American, prominent African-Americans, they pushed for integration. The whole civil rights movement was an integration movement. It was not necessarily to live next to whites, to live next to anybody. It was about laws that said I couldn't live there or laws that prohibited me. The civil rights movement was not just about civil rights alone as far as, wanting to be with white people is about the laws that prohibit you from voting, from buying homes, from going to your public school or the school nearest you. There were some efforts by Blacks to get around it, building independence and small Black towns. But for the most part, Black people lived in the urban areas in the 40s and the 50s. Went for the big migration. Chicago wouldn't have been integrated the way it is. And, it's a lot to it. It's more than just working for the slave master and not doing it for self. Most Black people, when you work, you get your money and you go do it for your family. If they got the markets and they got the stores and they can sell stuff cheaper than the Black store, unless you really commit it, you go to the Black store if you choose to, and there are groups that recycling Black dollars at one time, and 100, 900, 800. They got lists of Black businesses, but you got to want to do that. But most people just want to just get whatever they need, and the cheapest they can get it and move on. I think most Black people, for the most part, recognize that if, you know, they don't want to live next to nobody that don't want them to be there. You know, they wouldn't mind living, you know, I mean, that some Black people might, you know, they just want to be around white folks. I'm not saying that there's not some, but I think the whole issue of saying that segregation or integration was a devilment. In some ways it was, but in some ways it provided protection. It provided, yeah, you're right, some whites were enslaved, but they were called indentured servants and they had 7 years and they could get out. It was Virginia that started chattel slavery. And that's when we can enslave the Africans for life. That's a whole different game. You know, and as far as the Italians, the Irish and all of that, they, like you said, you know, they were part of the land grab. They were part of the Holocaust of enslavement of us and building those little Italian towns and Irish towns and Jewish towns, because they were all practicing racism against African people. So I can't use them as a model, because they didn't just put their nickels together or got a stimulus package. They exploited our labor, exploited our inhumane, they participated in our inhumane treatment. Every one of them, every group that did that. And so, you know, the oppression of Black people and the assassination and countering the intelligence with the assassination of leaders and programs that pushed a sense of consciousness and a sense of togetherness were assassinated or it was destroyed because it was a threat to America. And even the Nation of Islam, they start messing with Herbert, you know, Scientology, even up to today, you know, and they was under Elijah Muhammad. You never would think the Nation of Islam would be in any type of project with Scientology, European Scientology, or with the Moonies for a little while. But people do things for money. People do things for the best interests of their organization and the way they see things. That's all I have to say right now.
Yes, sir. Thank you for your words, comments. I would just like to, you know, I understand what you said about the Irish, Italian, and Jews, you know, but I also have to add, like, the Chinese, the Japanese, you know, they were also kind of like a forced labor class, cheap labor. And with group economics, they also were able to build their own communities, self-sufficient communities, and even create barriers where their language is like not even understood by us because they don't need our money, our services. They aggregate their own dollars to support their own businesses, and they trade and barter with America at the same time as an asset. Black people have a special, special relationship with America in terms of how we were treated and are being treated. And it does have a lot to do with the outcome of how you said some Black people just wanted to take care of their families, because the condition that we endured in America was so bad, it made us just say, I'm just going to take care of my family. But other groups take care of each other. Other groups are like, we are family, you know? And Black people, under our worst conditions, have been forced to be like, I'm just going to take care of my family. And we have, by that mentality, have quite a few Blacks that slip through the cracks. And they you know, grow with the mindset of saying, well, since I did it, everybody else, anybody other Black person could do it. but that doesn't, their success doesn't translate into the overall improving the condition and bettering the condition of the overall masses of Black people. The overall masses of Black people are poor, disenfranchised, mass incarcerated, brutalized, unemployed. I mean, the masses. So we did have a few that slipped through the cracks. I mean, I'm an anomaly myself. You know, everybody on here is pretty much an anomaly. If we've made it past a certain age, we're pretty much comfortable monetarily. You know what I'm saying? We may have homes and to give our children, and we're the anomaly. We're not the normal. We don't reflect the condition of the masses of our people. I tell my students and I tell my people, you know, this all the time. I'm an anomaly. I have my brothers and sisters. I have three brothers, two sisters. They reflect the condition of our people. I slip through the cracks by, you know, especially as a person with a pre-existing condition. But I don't allow my position and my slipping through the cracks, I don't allow that to condition me to think that everybody can do it. Because racism, systemic racism and pseudo-white supremacy doesn't care how high your GPA is, how skilled you are. It doesn't care how old you are. You just have to learn how to navigate and pray that you're not someday pinpointed as the next victim that a Caucasian or Caucasians in plural want to make a victim, want to destroy, want to kill, want to frame, want to incarcerate, want to brutalize. So I just, you know, I thank you, because it really got me thinking about a lot of what you said in terms of our condition, and that we individualize our success now. That's been our problem. We individualize. We say, since I did it, everybody can do it. That's not true.
Yeah, but the enslavement of African people, they were integrated on the slave plantation. They were integrated on sharecropping. The earth is integrated. It's only through laws of social white space that they can say you can't come. And you know, it's more. You know, to think it's our choosing not to be among our own people is our ignorance that we don't know how to work together and build together when we did do things. If opportunity, you get a scholarship. I got a nephew, he got a Rhodes Scholar. Cecil Rhodes killed a lot of Black people. Yeah, but he wanted to go to Oxford, go to Europe and get the education. I wouldn't do it, you know, but if, what are you going to tell them? Don't take a full ride, you know? Europeans know how to exploit Black people to the point in which they utilize their talents, their skills for their business, their corporation, their educational opportunities and things of this nature. It's like Black attorneys who can't get good cases because, you know, Black people say, well, I'd rather give me a white attorney. I mean, you know, there's a lot to oppression, the psychology. Mm-hmm. And I just think that segregation has its problems when it comes down to certain fundamental rights like voting, like buying property, like education, opportunities, and like economic opportunity. Like the brother was saying in the football, you know, it's one thing to go out there and play. It's one thing to be a coach. And he's arguing for coaching, head coaches, but you need some head owners. And that's what you're saying. But that's, you know, it's not as easy as they develop structures where it prohibits you from becoming an owner, a full owner, a majority owner, and things of this nature. So it's some hidden laws, some hidden codes and practices that's written in deeds. Don't sell my property to Black people. It's It's written a thing that when you go to court, you're guilty because we for economic reasons and other kind of reasons. Yeah. So it's not like we just ignorant people that don't know how to work together, be together, and don't see the beauty of being together. Because most of our communities have been decimated, not by white, black people moving out of them, because of the poor conditions and sometimes the violence in them. So they move to white communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and economic opportunities of housing and things. They can buy a bigger house in an empire than they for $500,000 to $600,000 in the inner city. The house is going for $1 million. So there's a lot to desegregation and integration.
Yes, sir. Definitely. Definitely. I mean, I agree, you know, about most of what you said. I just, I remember you saying something about like integration throughout the world. And what I notice is there's more segregation throughout the world. You know, every living organism segregates themselves until they need to satisfy their necessities. Lions are segregated until they need to go integrate amongst the wildebeests and eat. You know, sharks are segregated. And they you know, they go in the ocean as a group and they go towards wherever they find another segregated group of fish to feed on. Every country that has the support and backing to where when their citizens go all across the world, they're segregated. And they have a segregated power that tells America, like in China, you know, don't mistreat the Chinese, you know, don't mistreat, you know, the Jews from like Israel. Don't mistreat the Arabs, you know what I'm saying, that are in this country. Don't mistreat so-and-so. They have a backing, a segregated backing. And when you go to that country and you look on television, you see those people ruling that territory and establishing and maintaining a mass power to back anybody that left their country. They have a country to back them, to protect them. You know, blacks, we don't have any protection. Even in Africa now, we still have colonial outside influence that prevents the countries from having total autonomy and control over their natural resources to be able to create a hub and a strong united front against any type of external influence that can cause internal strife. I mean, I'm just saying, my thing is, if we would have just stayed segregated, if we just would have allowed time, I mean, we had football teams. We had we had ownership of those teams. Now, they weren't making as much as the wealthy Caucasians who funded those teams off of the capital from enslaved Africans' free labor. But we had enough black people patronizing those games for black people to make a living and through time have multi-million dollar, you know, industry, athletic industry. We had time, you know what I'm saying? Because Caucasian, they were already envying us for our musical prowess, our athletic prowess, our culinary prowess, our hair, our clothing. We dressed them, we fed them off of the tit of black wet nurses. They envied everything from our DNA to our DNA and brain and everything in between. And I'm saying time would have reared its head and said, you know, it would have made America bow down to the reality of who we are and how dependent it was. It would have given us a chance to barter our own condition to integrate, to so-called integrate. You know, like the Japanese and the Chinese, they don't need, there are very few Chinese politicians because they don't need politics. They don't need to vote. They have the money. They aggregate their dollars and they take care of themselves. They don't need the vote. Vote does not elicit revolution. It pacifies it. We're voting on bought and sold black people, and we're voting on wealthy Caucasian philanthropists to somehow make a difference to somehow pass laws to benefit us. And they're never equitable laws. They're never laws to make us equal. They're laws to pacify us into subservience and dependence. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, it's like, it doesn't make sense for us to, and I know you said that Black people, we think different, but that's the problem. That's the problem. We have no code of conduct, the code that we all can agree upon, that no matter what we believe, what religion we have, what political party we're a part of, we're in that political party representing the code of Black betterment, universal, you know, universal, addressing our universal cause, our universal champion, our cause, a mission of Black empowerment, Black opportunity. So let me try to see if I can get, I thank Allah for talking, for your comments and getting me to think about my position in a more broader sense about where our people are. But I don't think we got to change. We got to change that mindset. Something, we got to come up with a common code, a common way of thinking, so that no matter what, we're all about our self-interest. And some Blacks are going to want to stay next to Caucasian people and live next to them, but they should even be a part of the code. If you're going to live with Caucasians, you act as a liaison of peace between Black and Caucasians. You don't just live next to them and act like them. You act as a liaison of peace for the Black code to stay codified. So economics. Brother Mashinda, doctor. What's HI-24?
That's Brother Hemrick.
Brother Hemrick. Anybody, comments, my bad. Anybody else before I move on? I'll move on. All right, economics. In 1967, the median household income was 55%, had a 55% wealth gap between Black and Caucasian.
Hello, we're not, I was muted.
Yes, sorry, sir.
Brother, but I was trying to give Mashinda and the doctor the opportunity before I comment.
Yes, sir.
Doctor, if not, I can get rolling.
Yeah, I was going to say something. I was like you. I was waiting on Mashinda. I know how fast we're going.
Put on, doctor.
I was just going to say, you know, I agree with Brother Thomas, man. I agree with everything you said, man. But Brother Ra comes in and just put it in perspective, man.
Yes, sir.
I mean, I feel your heart, Brother Thomas. I agree with everything you're saying, man, but kind of like, you know, Professor Rock, you know, I get up in the morning, man, I just got to make it, man. I got to do this. I got to do that, man. I know the issues, but, you know, whites always looking forward, man, in the future. You kind of said that, you know, they got their plans, but, man, we got to look forwards, backwards, side to side. You know, like you said, they make so many issues for us, man. And it's you know, like Brother Professor Ross, it's a struggle, man.
Yes,
it's a struggle. We got more stuff to deal with trying to stay afloat. And, you know, and it just breaks it down where everybody has to do their own thing, man. It's tough, man. It's tough.
Yes,
I wish it was some kind of easy way. I agree with your numbers. Look at the numbers and the pictures. I agree with everything you said, man, but it's just no easy way, man. You know,
Yeah, definitely.
Like you said, they devise up, man, and we get, man, and you just, you know, like you was talking about the jobs, man. I do stuff, man, that people I grow up with never go in the field that I went into, man. But
yes, sir.
I really had no other opportunities. I looked at, my thing was, I know what I need as far as money. I can go here and get it. All I have is a high school diploma.
Mm-hmm.
I can go make the most money here doing this that a lot of other people don't agree, but I got to look out for myself and my family, man. What do I want? I had to, you know, I had the point where I had to look, in the future. And, you know, if if we all can just look, like you said, the segregation thing, man, we can just look down, man. And I think Brother Hembrick or someone said it one time, did you realize what the effect was going to be? You fight for this right now, but what's the effect down the line is going to be? You know, it's tough, man. It's just tough, bro. And, you know, I don't know the solution. We kind of know the causes, but we're all here just trying to struggle, man, and trying to figure a way. And, you know, going back to the sports, man, I mean, like I said the last show, you get old, man, you start learning. I'm looking at you going downtown for a victory parade? I get out of it. All these guys getting paid big bucks, coaches, and you going to celebrate them making money, and you're not getting part of it.
Nothing.
What do we get? We get the joy of watching someone else. Mm-hmm. They make this society. We claim that we're part of a team.
Yeah,
teams. And you, like you said, you know, the group that was there. You know, I think it was who said that? Yeah, you know, we at home. You know, why all the people that can afford the tickets are there, and you at home, and they got us bamboozled, man, to follow these teams.
Yes, sir.
And I'm looking at this. Wait a minute, man. Okay, how am I benefited from this? Financially?
Yes, sir.
I mean, joy. I mean, come on, man. Waking up in the morning should be joyful, man. You know, but. You know, we grew up on it, watching teams, watching players, man. So we're all part of it. We just didn't know. But now, man, it's tough, brother. It's tough, man. And I love it when you come on and Brother Rob, man. I mean, like I told Roski before, man, I know everybody's busy, but I like to just get you two, Brother Rob and Brother Thomas, come on and just get on there, man, because you come up with some stuff. And make you, yeah, you're right. But then Brother Rock come here and make you humble.
Yeah, exactly.
He gives you those both sides, yeah. Man. Like, come on, man. That's I know right. It's like this, but hey, man, right. I got to eat.
That's right.
You know, we have to eat. We got to do this right now until someone comes up with that magical solution, man, where we all get on one page. But, hey, I want to let Brother Hembrick, because Brother Hembrick come on with some more of the history. Get back on. So let me hear some of the Brother Hembrick stuff. Yes, man.
Thanks, Brother All Doc. Right. Brother Hembrick?
Yes, sir. Appreciate the format. It goes back to what I initially lectured on was know thyself. And, you know, we wonder why we're the only ethnic group that can't seem to bring about some unity amongst ourselves in more areas than we are. Let me put it this way. Because of our mindset, from the time we got here, our mind changing from a collective to an individualistic mindset is probably the major part of our problem. And you know, you guys, I'm a historian. I always like to throw this out there, but we need to look at when we did do these things you're talking about. You have to have an example to go by.
Sir.
And so that's what those historical examples are there for, to show when we did do this, when we did rule that, when we did make the best products in the world. I was talking to somebody the other day about the water fountain thing and the colored this and the white that. Hell, we should have some brothers that freaked off the colored water fountain. I don't want to drink behind no white folks, no way.
Mm.
I know how they are, health conscious wise.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, kissing dogs.
I don't know what. I want a separate thing. I want a separate bathroom. I don't want to go in there behind this bloody ain't washing his hands and all this and that. But anyway, getting back to the societies that we had that you mentioned earlier, we had a many of them. I just come to find out recently that a lot of these lakes that are in the United States were former, you know, were former black towns.
Exactly.
That flooded them out.
That's right.
And you know, got lakes there now. And I used to love lake fishing and whatnot. Yeah, Rasha Key. I can't hear him. He's
signaling. You're on mute, Ross.
Yeah, just go ahead. I wanted to share something.
Okay.
Before Brother Thomas get to the economics. Go ahead, Embry.
Okay. And you know, we have an example right here in California.
Mm-hmm.
A town called Allensworth that used to exist.
Yes, sir.
Still there now. It's a state park. And these brothers and sisters were thriving around the early 1900s, 1905. They were escaping, you know, racism in Southern and Northern California and created their own town. And they were right by the railroad tracks so they could get all the supplies they needed because they're right by the, the train track, and still are to this day. So, we can, and then also taking into account the major resources that have industrialized Europeans and others come from Africa. So, you know, we are, if we could ever get it together between our ears, but you have to undo a lot of stuff that was learned. And now we're at the stage, like Brother Ross said, you know, we're in the fight. And so people do this and that and the other thing to survive. But we're surviving. You like, where have we? Well, I can only think of a couple of places where, and usually we're falling behind white folks. We go into their neighborhood and they leave and we take over.
Yes, sir.
You know, what do we do with it? You know, why we got it is a question. But I know at the crux of what has us all messed up is what I call the Willie Lynch syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some folks that think it never existed, it never was a letter, it never was this and that. But if it wasn't, we sure act like it was. Because the things that we do and the way we respond to things and the way we treat each other and all of that, it seems as though it was something to that. You know, we've all been through the school day syndrome and, you know, other syndromes that we have amongst each other that we should not have. And then getting back to those towns you talked about rebuilding, brother, we have to be able to protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. We've had brothers that have been in the military that have these skills, and, you know, they'll take them out because they don't want them passing on. That was Geronimo Pratt and all of that. But in order to do what you're talking about, you're going to have to be able to protect yourself. Because they're going to come in like Rosewood and like Allensworth and like Corbin, Kentucky, and on down the line. And Greenwood, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Exactly.
And all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there definitely is a need. We had the brother on talking about, you know, we will shoot back. But we got to understand, you know, we're in a minority in this country.
Exactly.
And we're behind enemy lines.
That's right.
And we talk too much. We broadcast.
Exactly.
We need a mile revolution, is what I've been saying forever. But anyway, we're in the fight. People are doing what they got to do to survive. I can't knock them for it. I will say this, though, with the structure of the schools and all of that, all of those groups that you mentioned that are non-white, brown and yellow groups and whatnot, you know, they go to the regular schools, but on the weekend and after school, they tend to have these cultural things to mold their children into what they want them to be.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I saw an excellent thing on the news yesterday. I was so proud to see that segment. This sister up in Lancaster got the little sister, 8 and 9 years old, teaching them a trade about braiding hair.
Wow.
And it's free to the kids. And this is how this sister started in her auntie's a beauty salon when she was 8, 9 years old. But it's a skill where you can make some money.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you are able to do, and I've always been an advocate of having two areas that you can make money. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Yes,
and
sir.
So, like the brother that came on the show a while back, and he had this rich guy was going to give him a room in every one of his apartments, buildings that he had for skill mm-hmm. development for Black kids. These are the things we need to be about. We need kids to, people know how to put on a roof. You know how to be an electrician.
Yes,
we invented all of this stuff to begin with.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? But do we know that? No, we don't.
Yeah.
And we tend to look to Mr. Charlie for approval on a lot of stuff, and he don't know poo-poo and grits.
That's right.
But he do know how to exploit you and get you going against you so he can keep on, come in and take over and keep on exploiting that he's done from the jump. Because he's last one to come on the scene who didn't have nothing, and he's still practicing taking things that belong to others. Like Dr. Clark used to say, he always wanted things other people had, thought he couldn't do without, and don't want to pay for. He take what he want.
That's right.
Okay, so it's going to take facets of all of this stuff that was mentioned, but I think the main thing is a unifying situation is what we need, is what we lack, and what I see these other groups have, and they just pass us on by.
Teach. Thanks a lot, big brother.
So, but I know, we behind enemy lines. When the cannons shoot off, some people's eyes get big. Others, run to the fight. Others run away. Others, say, it's all kind of madness going on. So, anyway, that's all I have to say about the subject, but I kind of agree with you wholeheartedly in some respects.
Thank
but you. I know if we would just go back, I hate to say this, but I'm going to say this anyway. A lot of religious fervor has us all twisted up too.
That's true.
And that and education, I think, are the biggest hindrances.
Yes, sir.
Us getting our head together like it need to be.
That's right.
Examples are there. All we got to study them and look at them and see where they went wrong and try not to make those, because I think the Garveyite thing was the best thing we had going since we've been. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely in recruitment, most definitely.
And also the Booker T. Washington thing. You know, if you have a brick house, you ought to own a brick yard. Like J. Metzlinger put the sole of the shoe and the top of the shoe together.
That's right.
So we're the one that created all this stuff that he's benefiting from. So why can't we do it for ourselves?
Mm, yes, sir.
Which is, the magic question.
Magic is a $64,000 question.
And then, the trade amongst us and in the diaspora. We got enough people in the world that, we don't need nobody else.
Exactly. And enough resources, definitely.
With enough people. We got Brazil, you got Australia, you got the Pacific Islands, you got, we got folks everywhere. The world shows you to be individualistic and materialistic. And that's the order of the day.
Yes, sir.
World. So, with this being the age of Aquarius, the age of enlightenment, maybe we'll become a little more enlightened and can get it together. So
that's right.
That's all I had to say.
Thank you, sir. Brother Rossi Key.
Yeah, I was going to share a few things, but for the sake of time, I'm gonna let you go ahead and continue. We're gonna be doing this forever, so we can visit some of the points I was gonna make later at another time.
I'm just gonna flow through it then, because I got a lot of points to kind of address some of the people, address some of y'all, you know, just to kind of put it together in some other activities, areas of activity. Economics. So in 1967, the median household income was 55% wealth gap between Black and Caucasian. In 2014, it rose to 61%. So, and it's getting, that was in 2014. It's getting worse. We already know it's getting worse. And we already know the cure to this is Black business and entrepreneurship. You fire yourself for working at Caucasian people's job and hire yourself working for your own business and then hire people to look like you. That's the cure. It's always been that easy. We need to start producing skilled workers from school. And we really needed to take advantage of a segregated educational system so we could teach our children how to focus on a skill or doing for self. Or if they go to school, having a community to welcome them back so they could use that educated skill or knowledge inside of their own communities, you know, working within their communities. I mean, that's all what other communities do. But like what Baba Ross said, it's like we don't have that mentality. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, because we don't have it, it's like, that's just not going to cut it. Whether we start with the next generation and say, forget about people our age and up and just start with the children and train them, then that's what we got to do. Maybe we got to be like in the, that so-called story about Moses when the children of Israel had to walk through the wilderness for 40 years because they lost faith and had to wait till their children was qualified for the promised land in that allegorical story. How has social integration failed Black economy? More than 90% of the nation's wealth is maldistributed in the hands of Caucasian America. Black people own and control less than 1% of the nation's wealth. Integration has enabled Caucasians to live off of two incomes, 100% of their own income and more than 85% of our income. Integration convinced Blacks to close Black businesses to patronize and enrich Caucasian businesses. This is where how integration affected education. Level of education has little, and this is just what I think this page right here, it argues against us focusing so much on education. I mean, because it's not about going to these schools, it's about how you use what you have, whether it's an education, a skill, or just going into the, you know, becoming a laborer working for a Black business. It's about how you use what you have. So this argument says that a level of education has little effect on Black prosperity as compared to uneducated Caucasians. At the end of slavery in 1865, approximately 98% of Blacks were illiterate. By 1896, Blacks reduced their literacy rate by more than half, from 98 to 45%. It was further reduced to 25% by 1920, and Europeans entered the country during the same 30-year period. They had nearly the same illiteracy rate as we did, but they had as their newly emancipated counterparts, Europeans had a lower achievement rate, but they also were installed in management and ownership class positions, outdistancing Blacks in employment, business, politics, and income. So we are all the systemic racism doesn't care about education. It doesn't. I mean, when it comes to education, I thought about it as a teacher and I realized the only way education can work for Black people is if we had a community that welcomed our educated and that took advantage of our skilled so that they can service us in our community and we can patronize their services in our community. Without a community to welcome the educated, education's useless to us, because the educated Black person goes straight to a Caucasian business, goes straight outside of the community to use their skills. So we were convinced the reason why education worked during Jim Crow, because we were educating ourselves, and the teachers or the people, the skilled people, the lawyers lived in our community. The carpenters lived in our community. The doctors lived in our community and serviced our community. The teachers taught at the segregated schools. So we had a community to envelop and welcome the educated. Integration destroyed that. Integration destroyed it. So now, educated Blacks simply become low-level workers and domestic servants. That would happen back in the days after integration. Without any place in which to use our education and skills, we're forced to work for Caucasians for substandard wages and working conditions. Black people are never really paid what they're worth, and even in 2022. Blacks, what we do need is our own communities where we can own control. We can own and control our own businesses and economy to employ one another using our skills to practice group-based economics, competitive economics. That's the purpose of education. You got to have a home for our children and our educated to go to use their skills and to contribute their education towards community building and group economics. Or else education simply just empowers Rome because we sent our children to Caesar to get the education. They just become Romans, citizens empowering Rome. I understand, you know, so-and-so gets some type of scholarship, but that's what Caucasians do. Like Baba Ross said, they exploit. I've noticed in the news, we're having a lot of our young Black male and females getting 100% on SATs, 100% on ACTs. Their intelligence quotient scores supersede Einstein, and we're what Brother Henrik said, we're awakening. This is the age of Aquarius. The gods are awakening. But guess where the gods are going? They're going to work for Rome, for Caesar, because we don't have the institution or community to groom our genius. Education don't mean anything if we ain't got an institution to groom our genius. They're just going to be exploited and sopped up into this European westernized, hypersexual, alcoholic, drug addict, messed up diet, messed up death style of an environment, and their wisdom is going to be sucked up until they don't have anything left to even give us or for us to utilize as a people to improve our condition. Entertainment and athletics. From 1904 to 1950, there were more than 30 Black-owned professional basketball teams during the Black Five period before integration. After integration, there are no Black-owned and controlled professional basketball teams. From 1885 to 1950, there were over 40 Black-owned professional baseball teams in the Negro Leagues. After integration, there are no Black-owned and controlled professional baseball teams. The HBCUs used to produce the best Black football players. After integration, the majority of Black athletes attend PWIs. Excessive energies and flamboyant death style renders the Black warrior class obsolete. After entertainment and athletics, all we are rendered obsolete. Entertainers, rappers, singers, and actors. Music industry has been taken over by a Jewish gay mafia that influenced the artists to produce music that elicit hypersexuality, anti-sexual activity, drug abuse, gang violence, alcoholism, and excessive living. Entertainers are also rendered useless to the struggle due to flamboyant death styles and a pursuit of the bag at all costs. Labor. Currently, over 60 years past segregation, Black unemployment rates is twice as high as Caucasian counterparts. We can easily cure that by producing business owners and entrepreneurial professionals that employ themselves and others, have a community where we patronize our business owners and hire our own people to work for equitable wage by Black people who are sensitive and receptive towards giving their own people a just wage and a proper working environment. Blacks are dependent on Caucasian businesses for employment, therefore decreasing the chances of competing for jobs with Caucasians and other ethnic groups peers in a stressed job market. So the stressed job market, we're the last ones hired, first ones fired. Blacks are always last hired, first ones fired in a regular job market. And Caucasians tend to practice self-serving hiring practices in a stressed job market due to recessions within the workforce. Self-sustaining owned and operated communities filled with Black businesses employed and patronized by Black people would solve unemployment disparities overnight. It's going to take a long period of time for us to do something like this. But once we did it, our unemployment rate and our disproportionate amount of Black people that are suffering in poverty and unemployment would decrease exponentially. Law. According to the report, Black Americans are incarcerated at a state average at 1,240 per 100,000 residents, whereas Latino Americans are in prison at a rate of 349 per 100,000 residents. White non-Latino Americans, meanwhile, are incarcerated at a rate of 261 per 100,000 residents. We already know we don't belong. We belong in a safe hub where we can make sure that everybody has access to an equitable amount of necessities, so we can minimize the crime and minimize how many of us are caught up into this mass incarcerated unjust judicial system. Our research shows that Blacks comprise of 62.7% and whites 36.7% of all drug offenders admitted to state prison, even though federal surveys and other data detailed in their report show certainly that the racial disparities bear scant relations to racial differences in drug offending. Everybody uses drugs around the same amount, but the disparities are heavily weighing towards Black people being incarcerated for nonviolent drug offenders as it relates in comparison to Caucasian people because of racism and pseudo white supremacy. There are, for example, 5 times more white drug users than Blacks. Relatively to population, Black men are admitted to state prison and drug charges at a rate that is 32.4 times greater than that of white men. In large part because of the extraordinary racial disparities in incarceration of drug offenses, Blacks are incarcerated for all offenses at 8.2 times the rate of whites. And every 20 Black men of the age of 18 in the United States is in a state of federal prison compared to 1 in 180 white men. And they
Brother Thomas.
Yeah.
That third bullet point, it says 13.4 times.
Did I say 13.4?
You said 32, something like that.
Oh, 13.4 times, yes, sir.
Okay. Bad.
Thank you, brother. Politics, this is my specialty right here. Since 1960, there has been a sizable 8,000 increase in Black elected officials from approximately 100 to 8,000. However, Black disparities have either stayed the same or worsened. Black per capita income compared to white per capita income went up over the past few decades, but the gap between poor and middle class, the gap that widened exponentially. The 8,000% rise in number of Black elected officials did little to impede the steady increase in Blacks entering into the criminal justice system. Black poverty rates, homelessness, unwed motherhood, single parent households, drug abuse, and gang-related violence and activity. All that under an 8,000% increase in Black politicians. Black politicians are apprehensive to use their power to address the needs of the Black community out of fear of generating a Caucasian backlash. Integration has us spreading our power to being, I want to be an American president. I'm not a Black president. I'm an American president. I'm not a this politician. I'm a American politician. You know, even though Caucasians focus on their Caucasian constituents, they focus on Caucasian interests. Black people are the only ones that spread their interests out for everybody else, avoiding the one group that they pander during elections, which is their own people. Black politicians appeal and pander for the Black vote while staying loyal to a Caucasian constituency after the after they're elected. During segregation, 100 Black politicians were unitedly committed to fighting for the needs of their Black constituents. I mean, during segregation, 100% of the Black politicians, 100 of the, all 100 of the Black politicians were interested and committed to fighting for the cause of Black, of their Black constituencies. Under segregation, they were all, that little small amount of 100 fought for us. And we gained during the Reconstruction and beyond, we gained a lot of accomplishment during that time. However, they were more effective than the 8,000 politicians weakened by 60 years of pseudo-integration. The last three areas of activity I just kind of bunched up together: religion, sex, and war. Religion, Black people participate in every known religion, from Christian to Catholic, Mormon to Jehovah's Witness, Jewish to Islam, Buddhism to Hindu, and from agnostic to atheist. They give billions of dollars a year to churches, mosques, synagogues, and temples, but spend way little time and money building, investing in Black businesses, entrepreneurships, nor establishing Black-owned, ran, and operated self-sufficient Black communities all across the nation. Like Brother Henrik said, Marcus Garvey had the most successful organization that superseded any religious belief, any political belief. It had a code that Black love, Black power, that Black empowerment was the universal code that superseded anybody's personal beliefs. That's the mindset we have to regain. Sex. Before integration, there was a 61% marriage rate among Blacks, but by the 21st century, it decreased to drastically to approximately 30%. Interracial relationships have decimated Black male and female households, mass incarceration of Black couples. Blacks, coupled with the rise in anti-sexual behavior, has also had a detrimental effect on the Black male and female relationship leading into marriage. So we already know integration, think we can integrate with this Caucasian in a relationship. According to the counter-racist code by Neely Fuller, any relationship that you have with a person where they're dominant and you're recessive, where they're dominant and you're the weaker, it's molestation, it's sexual assault. So while racism exists and Caucasians remain the dominant group, any relationship that Black people have with them, we're being molested, we're being sexually assaulted, we're being psychologically manipulated to think that having a relationship with our former slave owner is actually, we're actually equal. When in actuality, when we leave our home, and even inside of our homes, that home is dominated by that Caucasian person who we've miscegenated with. I have a lot of family members that are amalgamated with Caucasian people. And the only time you tell that that house has any form of color inside of it is when that Black person comes home, because the home is decored with a whole bunch of westernized Eurocentric decor, celebrations, holidays, and very, very little of Black culture is in that home, because that Black person has been stripped of their consciousness, stripped of their self-respect, of their Black pride, of their Black loyalty to their group. War. Black men and women are the most ill-equipped to defend themselves from acts of war via police brutality, hate crime, sexual assault in prison, industrial complex, concentration camps.
Could I just ask one question?
Yeah.
Bro, I mean, this is
it's depressing.
Make people want to kill themselves. Listen, bro, you know, there are some positive things going on. I mean, for you to just, I mean, I'm not trying to put down your presentation, but we are doing things. We are, there are Black businesses. There are Black people doing positive things. And, you know,
I agree, brother. I do, but that's the problem. They're individual, bro. That's not a problem.
White folks just attack each other. They had the biggest war with the Civil War. World War I, these white people fighting white people. I mean, Chinese fought Chinese. True. I don't know what the... I mean, you have... I mean, I'm, hey, man. Okay.
I understand. I do. But right now, I'm using this platform to make note that regardless of the individual strides, because they're individual, as a collective, we are basically...
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad built the Nation of Islam. It's called a nation, not individual.
I agree. That's the problem. It's called a nation, but we're a nation of individuals. I'm going straight political and straight social right now. I'm not going to bring any religious dogma to this because I'm a member of the Nation of Islam and I'm fully in support of separation and nationhood. But this, I'm talking about the Nation of Islam. We have what, 200,000-300,000 members. We're talking about a whole, what, 39 million or something like that people in America. You know what I'm saying? So we're a minority. This is the majority of us right here. I mean, just like what Brother Doc was saying about how we respond to athletics, how we respond to useless things that do not contribute towards bettering our condition, not one iota, yet it just used to dig us deeper into a hole of us becoming an obsolete non-factor in America. I mean, right now, we're being assaulted on every front, from the homosexual, the LGBTQZP+ community to hip hop that's been robbed by, you know, Jewish gay mafia and influencing us to be hypersexual drug addicts. Everything, bro. I'm like, we're dying. But it's like if nobody brings up the fact that we're dying, we're just going to keep on dying. If nobody expresses all the symptoms and we say, okay, but a few people slip through the cracks and they're not sick, but 99.9% of us are, that's not good enough. You know, or maybe 10%, 15%, but that's still not good enough. It's like we're dying. And I'm like, you know, I'm considering doing my next one on the vaccine. Because I am an animate opposer of the vaccine and the fact that COVID was created by gains of function experimentation funded by the United States of America to create a disease from SARS in bats so that it can infect humans and destroy and cull major populations of indigenous people because of our birth growth in comparison to Caucasians' birth. So this is not a joke. And yes, it should be depressing. It should be all of that, Brother Ra. It should be all of that because this is serious. We got people convinced by this devil that it's okay for us to vaccinate and not consider the fact that there's other things we should be doing to ensure that we don't fall victim to the bad death style, diet, and way of life that's causing us to fall victim to this man-made virus. So it's not getting better. And I ain't even addressed health in this. I'm only addressing these 9. Health, I haven't even addressed. I may even, Brother Rossaki, I may make that my next one about how you're just getting bamboozled by this enemy that made AIDS, that made freaking Ebola. And now COVID? Come on now. This is bull. I'm serious. So, we're not equipped to retaliate against our aggressor. We don't, and if we have weapons, we don't even make the weapons that we use. This devil can sell us a weapon that only shoots 100 times. And the 101st time that it tries to shoot it just doesn't work anymore. They have that much science in making weapons like that. We don't make our own weapons. We have no right to even go to consider an armed struggle. We don't make them. And if we don't make them, that means we're not really qualified to train and use them. Only as, you know, unless we're serving in the armed forces. But I'm gonna close out because I'm like, really, it is bad. And it's getting worse. How many Black people do they expect to die from COVID? And how many Caucasians are they willing to sacrifice to convince us that it's not a Black and Indigenous culling epidemic, culling conspiracy? How many Caucasians have they sacrificed to convince us that, oh, they're dying too? They did the same with AIDS when they gave it to Caucasian males and made it look like it was a gay-related immune deficiency syndrome, but somehow it came into Africa and made like 85% of certain populations in Africa, women and children, heterosexual, but it started off with gay-related immune deficiency syndrome. That's what they called it. So nah, man, this is serious, bro. We gotta change or we ain't gonna be here to fight, or there ain't gonna be enough of us to even try. That's my position, yo. I apologize, Baba Rob, but it's like that, man.
I apologize, that's your perspective. I you make people wanna be white. But I'm just trying to tell you, it's too depressing. You act like we haven't struggled against all the things you're talking about. There are groups that's trying to keep people from doing everything that you say that we're doing wrong. There are organizations that's out there doing I don't know what to tell you. You know, I don't know what books you be reading. I don't know where you get your sources from. But we've been struggling ever since we got here. And the war is not over. You know, we may be losing some battles, but we still, George Floyd, them white boys never went to jail if it wasn't for struggle. And the Aubrey case, I don't know what to tell you, you know. Black colleges, there's a lot that we do that the system makes you think we ain't doing anything. They won't let that keeps other people from doing things. Black people just want to be Americans. You understand? Because they've been acculturated.
Yeah.
Asians want to be Americans. Mexicans come, need their country to come here to be an American. You know, and that means a white mentality. We're not the only people to say, we're not the only people. Chico shoot Rodriguez every night too. I mean, the Mexicans are fighting and white people fighting each other. Everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you act like we the only one that got these problems? No.
I hear you, sir. We're not the only ones that have these problems, but we seem to be the only one who are so divided. Who are so, we're rendered.
January 6th, was that unity among white people?
January 6th?
Yes.
Definitely.
The attack on the Capitol.
Yeah, that was unity amongst white people. They did it. They did it and they got away with it. And then they're white. Then they're being protected. That's definitely unity amongst Caucasian people. Definitely. What if we march, we protest? We're no different than the wildebeest marching from one side of the grasslands of Africa to the other and getting their asses bit by the crocodiles and the lions and the cheetahs on the way to the other side. We march. And when the police come with they tasers or with they gases and everything, we do just like the wildebeest in Africa. We run and scatter. We'll drop our baby off to the side, trying to get away from these lion-like predators. We march. It's not working. It's not working anymore. It never really did. No revolution ever.
Can I say a few things?
Yes.
We definitely have different points of view because we all are individuals, because we only can express things that we kind of know and what we've learned. And so I think what we're doing here is expressing some things that we that we think that's the issues. And then we point out things that we think that could help our situation. And I don't think there's a right and wrong point of view here. It's just that whatever we bring up, we kind of should have some solutions to that. And further, we could discuss, and I know that what we're doing is a good thing because we're here. It's just that I think we got to go a little mathematical at times, identify what's going on, and then come with solutions to better the situation. And that's what it's about. It is clear that if we look at the Black situation worldwide, we are under a serious assault. That's clear. And then when I look at my students and I look at the Black students and the Hispanic students, they are being trained not to learn and to fear education. So I think it's all of our responsibilities, the ones that we, you know, we supposedly know some things. So we have to just continue to educate. I take my hat off to Professor Rock.
Definitely.
When he was very active in the community with being a politician and being on school boards and Compton College Board of Trustees, I was a living witness to him being the type of person that we need to help us in our situation. Yes, he took white students and brought them to Compton College for a free tutoring program. These are the type of people, this is why we do what we do. Professor Rye, brother, you too, Brother Thomas, you have programs that you are involved in. We need these type of people, and we need to continue to be collective and do what we do. And we just got to dig up some solutions here to help our situation. It is dire. You know, when you look at a school, and I'm not going to mention the school's name, where the African-American male population, and I was sort of in this situation too. When I graduated high school, I didn't have a 3.0. I had a 2.78 GPA. And it was due to me not being a person that knew how to study at that time. But three students with a 3.0 GPA and above,
wow,
and they're African-American. Wow. Yeah, we have some serious issues going on. We just got to keep fighting. Just like Ross said, we're struggling, and we're going to keep struggling. Yeah, and we need to.
Yes, sir.
The ones that know supposed to teach the ones that don't know. So we just got to keep doing this. And we're going to take our lumps, but just got to keep doing it, man.
Definitely.
And I appreciate, you know, what Brother Thomas brings to the table. And I appreciate Professor Rod and Hembrick and Brother Doctor. Brother Mashinda, for some reason, he dropped out tonight, but we just got to keep doing what we're doing.
Definitely. I agree, man. You know, I mean, I'm not a pessimist. I mean, you know, I'm in the Nation of Islam. We have our philosophy on, and a lot of the issues I brought is rooted in why the Nation of Islam solutions are so relevant, but that's not my topic today. My topic is, and I did have solutions saturated within, like when it came to education, when it came to businesses and entrepreneurship in our self-owned operated communities and things of that nature. We're gonna be forced to come together. We're gonna be forced to. The assault is getting severe every generation, more and more severe. We're gonna, you know, and these conversations we have right now, because I mean, I do come hard on my people. I'm Professor Ra, I am at the age where I am totally, totally disappointed. I'm disappointed in where we are. I'm just, you know, and that's just where I'm at right now. I'm just, you know, I'm disappointed I've historically studied the past and found out like there were times, there were things that we could have did and that's the past. But then I'm like, there's things we need to do now to reinvigorate the true genius of our people. And I'm frustrated because we're not doing it. And I see where we're doing it in certain places it's being done, but it's not united. You know what I'm saying? This group has nothing to do with this group. This group has nothing to do with this group. This group, they all have their own little ways to address whatever issue dealing with Black people, but it's not united.
Wait a minute, brother. You can't say that. We had a national Black, we got National Black United Front. We have a BCCLA, Black Labor Community Clergy, right here in LA. They meet they've been meeting for 10 years, man, at 8 o'clock every Wednesday in a big assembly meeting. There are people that's doing things. Now, we have a Compton Community College right up the street to get all the skills that you want, if you want to get some skills. But trying to get people to go there is hard. And it ain't because they're trying to get some money because they, you know, they need money and they ain't got time to go to school to learn how to get some money. So they start hustling. There's a lot of reasons that we do that we're in certain conditions that we're in. But there are a lot of Black people that are prospering. They're doing some great things. Some of these athletes are making donations, building schools, doing a lot of good things. It's not on TV because they ain't on TV don't mean we ain't doing something. I mean, you know, there are a lot of Black people that are trying to help other Black people. You know, there are organizations and individuals that make donations, contributions of time, energy, skills. Even Dr. Dre built a whole arts building for this Compton Unified School District. I mean, he could do more than that man could, but you take them for what they give. LeBron James built a school in Cleveland. I mean, I don't understand how, you know, you got the Nation of Islam, Sister Clara Muhammad. I mean, you got the Malcolm X College in Chicago and all of that. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. You know, I mean, because the white man don't promote it, we act like we ain't doing nothing.
No, I didn't say that. It's not about promoting it. We don't need them to promote it. We need unity, charity, this school over here, this charity over there. I'm talking about.
Name me one group you think got unity. Name me one that got total unity.
You know what? You know what? And that's the problem. I can't.
All right, then. Well, why get lacking?
I'm addressing the issue. That's the problem. I can't. You know what I'm saying? And that's the resolution as well. Little charities here and there, LeBron James School, Wapti Wam Whoopty Whoop. Charity is almost like throwing a pebble in the ocean. That's what it is. It's charity here and there. It's like you have a droves of people slaughtering, getting dying. And you're not even saving, you know, you're not coming up with a solution to save the whole. You're just saving just a couple and being satisfied with that. Charity does not, I mean, I listen to the charity. I see the charitable acts. You know, I give to this charity. Individual charitable acts is no different than individual success in the community. It's an anomaly. It doesn't do any benefit for the whole. It doesn't do any benefit for the whole. But if those people that got those means to have charity unite their resources and purchase an area and build businesses and jobs in that area, now that makes a difference. It's unifying your resources, brother. It's like we ain't got no common sense to unify our resources instead of $1 million here, $1 million there. What about $1 billion worth of united athletes and entertainers to build a community or businesses to really deal with hitting unemployment amongst Black people hard in America, to where we don't rely upon anybody else to employ our own? That stuff, we can't be satisfied with that anymore. It's not working. Charitable contributions from this so-and-so and that so-and-so until they no longer play the sport or capable of playing is not working. That's a band-aid on a fatal knife wound. It's not working. Those same people are still taking the vaccine and convincing Black people to do that. They're still a mouthpiece for white America. Whenever there's an issue, whenever there's something they want us to do, they use them to influence us to do it. They still working for the person giving them the bag. So they do these charitable things to convince us that they're doing something to make a difference when it's really not. It's like a placebo. I appreciate this platform. I'm just tired of the same stuff over and over again. Tired of the same thing that we do every generation. All the actors and athletes did the same stuff they're doing now. They gave charity here. They gave that. After Martin Luther King was killed, what do we have? A big ass concert. You know what I'm saying? All the entertainers got together and said, "Oh, say it loud. I'm Black and I'm proud." Had a big ass concert. Didn't make no difference. You know, it's like we do not constructively respond to a fatal situation that's been killing us for generations.
Yeah, the assault is real, and you have to do something. And there's some things that's being done. It's just that it has to be more to change the situation. And the system that we're in is dominant. So therefore, what do we do? Have to keep doing
it. Different. Do something.
Well, yeah, you gotta try different things.
Opposite of what we've been doing for 60 some odd years since the so-called, you know, integration. Do the opposite. Unify. Build. You know what I'm saying? Create self-owned, sustained, operated Black communities where we have a safe haven of employment, empowerment, unity, strength, love. And I mean, it's going to take a lot, but damn, it'd be better than spending money on spontaneous charity events and charitable contributions. Unifying those resources to build something constructive. Every one of our entertainers in it that have those monies, they're bought and sold, because they're trained not to do anything constructive. They're not going to do nothing really major. They're locked. That's part of their probably content. You can't do anything truly beneficial to Black people. Truly, yeah, to change your condition. You can't do anything truly. You can't take a knee. You can't make it conscious about the atrocities and police brutality. You can't do anything majorly consciously changing to benefit our people, or else you lose the bag.
Yeah, we are in the system.
I give you amen.
So, are in the system. But are we closing out now?
I'm closing. I'm done, bro. I'm done. I'm cool. Thank you so much. I'm glad that we had this platform, and that we have this platform. So
we're going to keep it until we, you know, they're going to have to take us out.
Yes, sir.
So, Professor Rob.
Yeah.
We're going to confirm Harold Welton for Monday.
He already confirmed. Yeah.
Okay, so that's good. We got Harold Weldon coming on.
I'm sending you his email so you can send him his
information. We already did. We did that. Okay, so that's good. And next Wednesday, we have, first of all, let me thank everybody. Thank you guys for coming and expressing your information. It's wonderful all the time to get this information. We got to tie some things together at times. and come up with more solutions. I've already seen what Professor Ra has done throughout in the communities of Long Beach and Compton in LA. And he was doing a lot of great work, in my opinion. And then it's just, you know, he's a part of our team and leading us and continuing to educate us so we can take this mantle up and bridge it on out to other people. So next week on this show, we have my daughter, Malcolm P., a senior in high school who's on her way to college, and I'm going to interview her. That should be a good treat for us to see one of our children, you know, doing things in a constructive way. I'm proud of her. She's a ASB president. I just found that out. She was a ASB vice president, but president, just like in the United States political system, when the one president go down, the vice president step up. So she stepped up, and now she's the president, the ASB president at her school. And I went to a parent-teacher conferences last night, and all the teachers had good things to say about her. So I'm proud, Papa, and Mama Bear, too. She's proud. So we're going to interview her next week. And matter of fact, I sent out before some questions. I tapped into the brains of the team and other people, and we got questions. So I think I'm going to do that again, reach out to a few people and gather some questions. So that should be very interesting. Okay, folks, each one teach one in Conscious Corner.
All righty.